You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
What's up?
And Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 125.
Yep.
of the Fanboy Garage. I'm losing track of these things. It is a great day to be a Star Wars fan. Mandalorian just finished its season finale. Tom Cruise had an epic meltdown. I guess there's going to be some more Game of Thrones stuff, which I am absolutely not excited for at all. But let's talk about The Mandalorian, because I've been waiting a whole lot of time. I got my Star Wars shirt. Hold on, wait. Yeah, I can't see it. All I want for Christmas are to find the two droids I'm looking for.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like an ugly sweatshirt.
That's fun.
Thing. I'd show you the rest, but then I'd like, oh, hey, let me just do that. There it is. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So
if you're watching us, you'll see what Aaron is talking about.
Yeah, you'll see my badass sweatshirt, yo. If not, too bad.
Sure.
I'll take a screen grab and share it on Twitter. But we're not here to talk about my articles of clothing. Let's talk about The Mandalorian.
Yeah. So the season two is over. We had the final episode this week, directed by Peyton Reed. A little surprising, right?
Yeah, he did a bang-up job.
He sure did. I don't know. What can you say?
Okay, wait.
Basically, I broke my social media hibernation just to announce that I felt like The Mandalorian is now officially the best Star Wars anything since the original trilogy, and then ran away again. I had mentioned that I didn't think I would want to see Luke Skywalker.
We're going right into it, huh?
Yeah. Well, come on, dance around. Okay. I mentioned I wasn't going to see Luke Skywalker on this episode or in this show, yet when it happened, I got goosebumps and I got emotional and excited and yelled, and it worked. And it I mean, I don't know where they're eventually going to go with it, or if they're even going to go with it or whatever, but it just, this show, again, it's such a love letter to Star Wars and Star Wars fans. And it's the prequel trilogy, it didn't feel like Star Wars in a lot of ways, but it kind of was original, right? It looked a little different. It felt a little different. The sequel trilogy felt a little bit more like Star Wars to an extent, but it lacked that originality. This, and the fan service was, I felt like, it served, the only purpose for it was fan service. It didn't really help to move the narrative along. With The Mandalorian, you're getting a perfect mix of, like, this feels like Star Wars. It captures all the fun and the adventure of Star Wars that, like, the prequel trilogy didn't really have, that adventure aspect. And the fan service isn't really fan service as much as it is, like, nods, really, to familiar things that the hardcore fans can really understand. But, like, there's also a point to a lot of it.
Yeah.
So it's not purely fan service in that sense. And it's a way to say, like, hey, look, this is the Star Wars universe. I feel like it just hits all the right notes. And I loved this season. No, I was rewatching season one. Mm-hmm. I've been rewatching season one over the last couple of weeks, and I'm now finished rewatching it. And I feel like, and I don't know if it's because of the context of season two now, but I feel like I even enjoyed season one more this time around, I just love this show now. And it's now, we know what the show is. We have a little bit more of a feel for the scope of it, right? It's no longer this little story about this lone gunman, trying to save this child or whatever. It's like a big Star Wars story now. And yeah, I don't know. I loved it. I loved the crap out of this.
Yeah. Talk about the universe getting bigger, right? We've been talking this whole time about how they've been building this world. Mm-hmm. And like Chris said, watching season one over, the story kind of like starts out small. And now it's grown so big over the two seasons. I was really happy that when they revealed Luke Skywalker, that it was like a CGI.
No, not just like a casted.
Not just like they cast someone else, you know, and cast another actor. I thought that was a small move, but a big move, you know, mm-hmm. instead of putting someone else. And that might have confused, you know, viewers. But man, that reveal, like my boyfriend was like, does he have a black glove on his right hand? And I was like, I think he does. And it's like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. And he's just like taking down, you know, all of these stormtroopers. And then the final reveal was just a very, I think, heartfelt moment, you know? And and now when you see that, you think about the other films and you think like, ah, it kind of adds a little special nugget to what they knew at that time. So then like you almost go back into those characters when you saw them first and know that they had this moment that you've never seen before. Mm-hmm. That's what I loved about it.
Yeah. I'm about to unload.
Go ahead.
A whole bunch of stuff. So on the Luke Skywalker thing, like I said before, like Chris, I didn't think they were going to do this. When the X-Wing comes, I'm like, they're not. They're still not doing
that. That's
what I said. Nah, someone else is going to come out of that X-Wing. And then you see a hooded figure come out. I'm like, no, that's not him. And then it's green. And then I saw the – because I thought they're jerking our chains. There's no way they're going to do this. And then I saw the glove, and I was like, that's freaking Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, that's Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
And look, it – is amazing. I also got, I literally, like when the X-Wing popped up, I got as close to the TV as humanly possible without actually pressing my face up against the glass, right? And I'm watching this thing and I got goosebumps. And even the second time I watched it, I got goosebumps and I like start to well up with emotion. And I don't know exactly what that is. I'm like, oh shit. Okay. Something's there. I get it in the season finale of the first season, when IG-11 comes swooping in on the speeder bike, like mm-hmm. when he pops off that bike, I legit was crying. I was legit crying because it was like the best thing I'd ever seen in Star Wars ever outside of like Vader mowing down those people. This is pretty cool. Like this was, here's the thing. IG-11's off the speeder bike has more emotional weight to me, and it's not me, and it's because it is Luke Skywalker, so I expect greatness from Luke Skywalker, and we got nothing less. But that moment was so unexpected, the IG-11 thing, that when I see Luke Skywalker, I'm like, holy shit, of course you're going to be dismantling people. That's amazing. Right. What I loved about the scene is it was a homage to that, specifically a hallway scene that Vader has in Rogue One. Like where he, it's like mm-hmm. him, Luke and a bunch of dark troopers versus Vader and a bunch of rebel, you know, rebel alliance people. And he just, you know, kind of goes, I mean, it is almost beat for beat where at the very end, you know, Vader basically chokes out one of the last guys and then throws him against the wall. And then in this one, Luke, you know, grabs the dark trooper and just squeezes the crap out of him. That's awesome. I'm still mixed about the use of Luke Skywalker in this. As I said before, I feel like the weight of the Skywalkers has a potential to derail some of the special things that make the Mandalorian great. I think up until this point, the idea of Jedi, until we meet Ahsoka, like Ahsoka is still a question mark because she's not technically a Jedi. Is a big question mark of like, who are they? Who are these force users? Blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, Din is like, he's going through this journey without actually knowing any of this stuff actually exists, right? I think always in the back of our minds, we knew obviously Luke Skywalker's in the world, at some point, like, you know, maybe they would intersect, maybe there would be some rumblings, but like they were like, oh no, we're not giving you rumblings, we're not giving you rumors. Luke Skywalker in the face, and I'm like I said, I'm kind of like I'm mixed with it. I love it for what it is. I don't want us to rely on it. I don't want fans to get their hopes up that this was that we're gonna see a Luke Skywalker show, and because I'll tell you, as good as the CGI is, as good as that technology is, there were a couple of moments where I was like, he's not blinking. His face looks a little, it's like a little off to the right, and his head is in this direction. And I'm like, that deepfake shit is kind of like, it's cool, but you're messing me up here. And, you know, it is what it is. It served its purpose. I hope that we move off of the Jedi thing. I think they gave us a lot of great, Chris, again, to your moments and some nods to things that enrich, you know, continue to enrich the story and enrich mm-hmm. the universe and tie it back to things people are familiar with. One of the things that I think in this moment, we were talking about it last week, or who could be the Jedi that he was communicating with. And we, you know, Ezra Bridger came to my mind, Cal Kestis from the Star Wars video game came to mind, but none of these people have the notoriety and the sort of weight, the gravitas that Luke Skywalker does. So it had to be Luke Skywalker, right? Like, we were fooling ourselves last week.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, I look at it as, to me, I look at this as more of a way to close the door on this arc, right? The arc that we've now sure. had for the last two seasons, which was, well, originally it was him having to deliver the child, right? Mm-hmm. To the client, then it was to get him to, you know, one of his own or a Jedi, whatever.
Right.
And right. now that's happened, and maybe this is now a way to get us away from now Grogu, the child, Baby Yoda, whatever. And now, because they set up a lot of other stuff in this, right? So the idea of him and Bo-Katan wanting to get the Darksaber, right? That whole concept. Moff Gideon is still alive. He tried not to be, but he's still alive and doing his thing. So we still have to figure out now what the fallout is going to be of all of this and those experiments and all of that. So I think that's where we're going in season three and maybe beyond. Do I think it's the last time we will see Grogu? Probably not, right? That would be a little weird to just kind of write it. But this was a nice way to put a bow on it and to get us away from that and move us on to something else for at least a season or maybe more. And that's kind of, that was, and the best way to do it was a moment like that, because now it makes sense. He's going to go off with Luke. We know Luke is setting up, you know, a new Jedi, you know, academy or whatever. So that, and we know ultimately, unfortunately, what happens there, but we're still years away from that moment.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, we are five or so years away from Return of the Jedi, right?
Yeah.
The destruction of the second Death Star. Ben Solo exists.
Yeah, but he would be about four or five at this point,
like,
right?
4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
Grogu could, for all intents and purposes, be Luke Skywalker's very first apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm. Which is a very, has a very interesting sort of connotation there. Like, there's something interesting there.
Yes.
I know a lot of people are like, oh, Kylo Ren murders Grogu. Well, probably not. Because Grogu's a pretty powerful little guy, clearly, and he's been trained since before the fall of the Republic.
Yes.
So there's that.
And there's another, like, at least, what, 5 years or so before Ben Solo even goes to start training with Luke from this point now?
So there's that. So I know people's brains were like, oh, my God, I'm like, oh, Kylo Ren murders Grogu. No. My thinking is that they're gonna put a nice little pin on the story of the Mandalorian, right? They revealed something super cool at the end of this episode,
mm-hmm.
Which is the book of Boba Fett. Which I gotta say, yo, Disney had Investor Day.
Yeah.
Okay. So most of these characters that they announced at Investor Day are like, aside from Ahsoka, are like new. Boba Fett is like He's legit. Like, people are dying for Boba Fett. They didn't announce it. That was a fan thing. They were like, no, we're going to give you the fans first. The, you know, obviously investors probably have some inkling of like what was going to happen, but like they held their ace. They didn't even reveal that shit. And they're like, oh, fans, guess what? We're giving you Boba Fett too. And everyone's minds were like, but then everyone's minds go, wait a second. Is that because he's a Mandalorian? Is that going to be season three? No.
No.
I think there was a reason why, Chris, to your point, that these two seasons continued in the chapters, right? So chapter 1, 2, 3, all the way through 16. Because this is a encapsulated story.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to give it a break. They're going to give us Boba Fett, small little mini series. And then they're going to pick back up with Mandalorian season 3, which I hope jumps a couple of years in the future. I hope we move a little bit.
Mm.
I'm excited.
I do have to say, I agree with you, Aaron, that the emergence of Luke Skywalker at the very end, I think it kind of took away that relationship that we saw between Mando and the child. Like, their goodbye to me was almost too quick and kind of overshadowed by, you know, Luke standing there in R2-D2.
Yeah.
Did you guys feel the same way? Like, I felt like it just happened so quickly.
There are two things. I agree with you. The moment you put Luke Skywalker in, it's like, again, our brains go, Jedi, oh my God, Jedi, oh, Skywalker, everyone loses their minds. I mean, that is all anyone is talking about right now, right? It's not like, oh, no, they'll talk about, oh, like, oh, Grogu and Mando, even each other, my heart is broken. Yeah, my heart was broken too. But here's the deal. The episode before this, where he takes off his helmet, undercut the moment that Grogu asks for him to take his helmet off in the season finale. Like, I feel like had he not taken his helmet off, and I get it, he's going to through incredible lengths to get Grogu back to him, including revealing his face. He had to do that, right? There's a difference between having to make that motion, that motion of taking the helmet off, and wanting to do it. He wanted to take the helmet off for Grogu so that Grogu could finally see his face, because that connection is there.
Yeah.
That, to me, that meant more than anything, but it was undercut by the previous episode and Luke Skywalker's presence just waiting there with like a, come on, give me the kid.
Yeah, a little bit. It's like, oh God, someone's waiting for me.
Yeah.
I wish that moment was, you know, maybe like just longer or something else.
I mean, it's still powerful. Don't get me wrong. It's still a powerful moment. But yeah, I think I probably would have been like, this is us, like fourth box of tissues, like bawling my eyes out, you know, off of that stuff. If those things didn't happen.
So I didn't feel any of that. That moment had all the power for me, because I wasn't even like, I was excited to see Luke, but by the time Luke Skywalker actually reveals himself, I knew it was Luke Skywalker, right? So I had that whole sequence where he pulls up and then he's killing all the Cylons. Sorry, I mean the dark troopers and all them, because they look like Cylon. They look like the original Cylons from the old school Battlestar Galactica, but which is ironic because what's her name, Katie Sackhoff played in the new Battlestar Galactica. But anyway, that whole scene where he's doing it, so like it's like that whole time I'm like, oh well, that's Luke. Okay, right. Like you, the glove is what really kind of gave it away for me. And then so when he takes the thing off, my immediate thing was like, oh okay, that's how they did it. All right, so they de-aged him and all that. Okay, great. Yeah. But from that moment on, like the final scene where the Mandalorian is looking at, they're looking at each other, him and Grogu,
yeah,
I totally phased out Luke and R2. I didn't even realize R2 was actually in the scene until like it kind of like I had to do like a double take, because I was so focused on the moment between Din and Grogu. Like that all worked for me. The whole thing where like, oh, he wants you to, you know, give him permission and all of that stuff to go, like all of that worked. Like that hit for me anyway, it hit all the notes. And I think part of it was because of the fact that I had already gone through my Luke moment when he was fighting the Dark Troopers. You know, like that had already been like, I went through that whole process. So, but I mean, I get it. I could see where that could be certainly distracting for a lot of people. That moment, and I guess this speaks to what the show is doing for me. That moment was not about Luke Skywalker at all for me.
No.
Other than the fact that he was there in the scene, clearly. I think that season three is going to be something completely different. And, you know, and it's funny with the Book of Boba Fett. They kept that a secret. I mean, they managed to keep this Luke thing a secret, which is amazing.
Crazy. Mark Hamill filmed stuff a year ago.
Yeah, but you know, the Book of Boba Fett, it's funny too, because like apparently none of us could do math, because they had said in their original thing, like, oh, they're going to have 10 new series, and they only announced 9. So we probably should have realized there was one waiting in the wings. Yeah. But that was awesome too. I mean, that post-credits scene, whatever you want to call it, was like so Star Wars too. Like even that just reeked of Star Wars.
The funny to me, I was in like with Boba Fett, there is something about his armor specifically. I think it's the way it's angled, because like the Mandalorian's helmet is very straight. Boba's is almost like he's looking down on everybody. And there's something very cool about that, about the way that comes across, because it's very iconic. It's like that sort of pose where he's resting the gun on his arm, and the helmet is like looking down this way. Like the banter between him and Bo-Katan, where she's like, I've heard your voice 1,000 times or thousands of times. I was like, yo, that is such a deep cut, because he's obviously a clone, and she automatic, as soon as he speaks, she knows exactly who's under that helmet, what he is, and that like bickering between all of them was awesome. The fact that I forgot her name, but Sasha Banks's character like swings on him right away, and then they have that epic throwdown, and she of course does her like little signature move, was but yeah, I was like, there's so much more to Boba Fett. We got a lot more than I would have expected to either, you know, at the same time, like, you know, the beautiful thing about this episode is that starts right with the action, right? Very Star Wars-esque, you know, with a spaceship being chased by another spaceship, if you want to simplify it. And it just throws us right into it. And that was so Star Wars. Yeah. It was great. Slave One chasing down, you know.
And looking back at this entire season, I mean, they managed to. Now, I don't know if we should assume this, but I think the assumption is that the Rangers of the New Republic, like, were those guys that we saw, like, in the second episode.
That's my suspicion.
Yeah, so if that's the case, and it would make sense, obviously, they set up three new shows, separate shows within the course of this season of this show without taking away anything from the narrative of this show. Like, it just, none of it seemed forced. Yeah. In most cases, it fit. I mean, the Ahsoka episode was probably the one that was the most like standalone in a way, but it fit because it moved along the narrative of the child and, you know, the Jedi's and that whole concept. Yeah, and it set all that up. But I mean, that's pretty amazing too. I mean, there's not many shows that you're going to find where they essentially set up three spinoffs in the course of an 8-episode season where these episodes aren't even that long, and do it well, and do it within the context of the narrative that they're telling.
And those three shows are all going to, they're going to intertwine with each other.
Sure.
Which will be really cool. Because you just get more Star Wars, more, you know, world building, etc. The Book of Boba Fett is going to be, that's going to be a very interesting show to watch. Because it's that underworld show that I think everyone was looking for, expecting to see. I mean, we're going to get that in Boba Fett, right? What he's doing, who knows who he comes across? We don't, you know, we have no idea.
Right.
The fact that he's back on Tatooine, hopefully we get the answer for, like, how is he out of the Sarlacc pit?
I'm sure we'll get that at some point.
And looking so healthy, must be eating a lot of bantha, a lot of bantha meat there.
Yeah.
You know, dad bod fat, but, still badass, dude.
Tad bod fat.
I mean, he's a thick dude. His like armor is like pushing out a little bit. Everyone's like all tight and whatnot, you know, man, looking lean and whatnot. And then you got Dad Bod Fett just coming in.
This whole season went by so fast.
It was good. So how would you guys rank? Would you say season, I know that they're both very intertwined with one another, but is season one better than season two or season two better than season one?
That's tough. It's tough for me, and only because I actually was thinking about this yesterday, because like I said, I just rewatched season one over like a couple day period of time and enjoyed it even more now. When I was watching this season, like I haven't watched it I haven't binged it, right? So I've just been watching it episode by episode.
Right.
This season felt to me like it was better than season one. But when I rewatched season one in a binge, like I was like, man, season one was really good. Like it was better than I even remembered it.
Until you hit episode five.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
I said, until you hit episode five.
Well, but yeah, I mean.
No, but then when you look forward, episode five sets up all of this.
Yes. That's why I say, like, we're having the context of like this season, watching the first season again, realizing that episode at the time, which seemed like a throwaway,
absolutely
wasn't.
So it gives you
a whole new thing. So I don't even want to bother comparing, because to me, this is just one big narrative anyway. And it's almost like it's seasons because it has to be, because it's television.
Sure.
But it's really just one.
It's
16 chapters of a story. Yeah.
Exactly.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it's funny because I went back and was like, oh my God, you know, how do you compare? I would say in terms of quality, season two is better in terms of just artistic filmmaking. Like again, every director that directed last season, with the exception of like Taika Waititi, was not involved at all because he's working on a Star Wars film probably,
and Deborah Chow wasn't involved because
she's working on Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah,
but as we've said many many times, all of the directors that directed last season have blossomed, and even Peyton Reed from his episode earlier this season to this finale has evolved. The beautiful thing about this finale that I absolutely adore was the calls to like things like Terminator, right? Yeah. Like there are certain scenes where like when the Death Trooper opens up that door,
yeah,
and you see the red eyes pop out, like that is Terminator, it's screaming Terminator. You know, the court fight choreography in that was badass. You know, Mando going toe to toe with the Darksaber with his Beskar spear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was set up. I mean, that's some good shit. Like, he did that thing where he kicked it. He kicked the spear and then blocked.
Yeah.
What?
This season, that's what I was going to say. This season definitely had a little more fight choreography action going on.
Yeah.
You know, than the first season, which I particularly enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good. It was bang up, and then, you know, Giancarlo Esposito was phenomenal as a villain in this. You know, he's a tour de force in this. I just love that guy. So it was, I think that the whole thing, you know, from start to finish, when I think about it, I enjoy season two. Season two really just kind of upped the ante a bit, while still kind of giving us things we're familiar with and moving things along enough for us to go, we're in a good place. And now, you know, big old question mark, what do we do with season three, which shouldn't be called The Mandalorian anymore, it should be called The Mandalorians. Because of that that little nuance of who owns the Darksaber.
Yeah, and also there's also, I think, more, we're going to finally get a little bit more to his story, because don't forget, in the episode that introduced Bo-Katan, right, and that whole thing, they start to touch a little bit on, like, oh, he's one of those.
Yeah.
You know, like,
he didn't take the watch.
Yeah, child of that. So I think you're going to get a little bit more of that, too. They'll probably fill in more of his backstory and maybe inform him a little bit more on what his whole situation is. So, I think there's definitely going to be a lot of that.
And for Bo-Katan, because you know, we don't know how she she lost the lightsaber, the dark saber.
Yeah,
a lot of people are like, oh, you know, Moff Gideon is going on about, you know, the ownership of the dark saber. So how did he get it? I'm like, he's not Mandalorian. He could have just taken it from her. You know what I mean? He could have just defeated all of Mandalore and just snatched it from her. You don't know. He doesn't have to follow those rules. He's a freaking imperial piece of shit. So he can do that. The other thing I want to call, I called Thalo after watching the episode because I was like, I got so much shit on my chest. I got a therapeutic. I got to talk about this shit. The one thing I will say, because I will not let this escape, anyone who's talking about this situation with Luke Skywalker in The Mandalorian to downplay or talk shit about Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi, just shut your mouth. Okay? Just shut your mouth. Because, yes, we got a hopeful Luke Skywalker. He's at the, you know, he's a budding Jedi master. He's about to get his academy up and going. That's fine. As I wrote on Twitter, for anyone who follows me, and I hope all of you listen, if 2020 has taught us anything, it is that a curmudgeon, empathetic piece of shit Luke Skywalker can absolutely exist, because 2020 has been a mother, and anyone who comes out of here going like, oh, everything's all great, blah, 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 you're smoking some good shit and I'd like some.
Yeah.
So I, you know what I'm saying? And that, this is the other thing too. Like, that did not take anything away from The Last Jedi. It in fact reinforced so much to me, because you have a hopeful Luke Skywalker. And when all of that energy you've poured into growing something gets dashed and destroyed, and you see the ashes in your hands, that does shit to people.
So, I mean, look, you could put aside for a second whether you feel like the direction of the character in The Last Jedi was right or wrong or whatever. But let's put that opinion aside for 1 second. The people who are sitting here saying, oh, see, this makes up for The Last Jedi, because this is missed the point of both The Last Jedi, I think, and this episode, because this is not that Luke Skywalker. Those are the people that wanted to still see Return of the Jedi Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. And that wouldn't have even made sense, like, narratively, considering everything that this guy went through. So this is a Luke Skywalker that is only 5 years past the events of Return of the Jedi, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, he still goes through a whole evolution. I mean, if you wanted to see Return of the Jedi Luke Skywalker, okay, that's fine. Watch Return of the Jedi Luke Skywalker. All right. But there's a difference between saying that he couldn't have turned into what he became in The Last Jedi and just thinking that there's no way that ever could have happened, because there's only one Luke Skywalker and this is who he is and this is whatever. So I don't see how the two things.
The hero of the galaxy.
I do think, if anything, between this show and these other shows that are released in this timeline, I think we're going to start to. I think they're going to fill in some of the gaps and some holes and stuff from this sequel trilogy and shed a little bit more light on that and maybe make a little bit more sense out of some of the things that happened. Because there are a lot of things in the sequel trilogy that are just thrown out at us, you know, from just the existence of Rey and all of those, you know, the new characters that are just there, to Luke in The Last Jedi and Snoke. You know, and that whole thing, and then obviously the Emperor and all that stuff, and the sprint that was Rise of Skywalker. I think having these shows at least build to some of that or foreshadow some of that stuff will help add context. And that's another thing that's amazing about what this show is becoming and what I think these other shows will tie into, is the idea of just like completing this story. You know, for the fans that want to dive into everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, you don't, it's not going to be necessarily, you're still going to have your books and all of that stuff, but like, this is a way to expand on this universe and bring a lot of things together in a way that's, I think, palatable for a wide audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And I mean, I think that was the purpose of bringing in Luke Skywalker. It's that. It's not just for the diehard, you know, Star Wars fans, it's for the mainstream audiences.
Sure.
Because if you brought anyone else in, it's not going to make any sense. Correct. They're not going to know who that
especially
person
with
is.
That big buildup.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, they reveal and it's like some like kid, you know, you're like, who the hell is that guy? Like, it's funny.
Yeah.
Jess, my wife, she humors my bullshit with Star Wars, right? She clearly knows who Luke Skywalker is. But when he reveals, like the moment he shows up and she's like, holy shit, who's that? And she's like, is that the weird headed girl with the horns? Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's not, I don't, you know, I just look at her. I'm like, keep on watching. And then she sees the green lightsaber. She's like, oh, she's got a different lightsaber. Wait a second. That kind of looks like a dude. And then he pulls the hood back and she goes, what the boop? And I'm like, I look at her. I'm like, that is the reaction that I'm sure every other mainstream person just had. What the boop? And then she's like, wait a second. Isn't he old? And I'm like, hold that thought for a second. Just keep on watching. And then she's like, wait, when does this take place again? And
right.
I'm like,
see, that's the thing. There are a lot of people that don't know this timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it's like, oh. She's like, and then his Kylo dude. I'm like,
later.
No. Take a deep breath. We're not there yet, girl.
That's what I was just going to say. I think his character in this episode kind of pinpoints a time frame for people that kind of aren't sure where we are. So it makes you understand like where we are in time, where we are in this like Star Wars, like, you know, timeline.
Yeah. I mean, even the reveal of Ahsoka, but people were probably like, who the hell is that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, because they wouldn't know.
They would never know. So they have to go back, right? And they have to go do some research and figure that out. Like just no idea who Ahsoka Tano is, right? But she understands her importance, right? And understands that she didn't want the responsibility of taking on Grogu. Like, that stuff comes through loud and clear. And that's great because it provides additional context. But somebody like Luke Skywalker, that's done. Nail in coffin. Jedi understands that's a dude that like beat up Darth Vader and he's going to take Grogu and make another Jedi.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. Right? So, yeah. And I lied. I should backtrack. Not the first apprentice. First apprentice would be Leia.
Well, right.
In theory, which I thought was.
Yeah.
Whatever. Good job, JJ. Piece of shit. Anyways.
All right.
What else can I say about this before we move on to anything else? It was great. That's all I got
to
say.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to. I'll probably get to experience that this tomorrow. I haven't had a chance to speak to any of the people that I know that are watching this show that are not like huge Star Wars fans. Yeah. You know, that don't know the, I mean, they've seen the movies, you know, most of them anyway, but they don't know a lot of this stuff. And I know that they had questions and I'm just curious now on knowing what happened and what they had, because they had already seen it on Friday when I was speaking to them, but we couldn't get into any details. So I'd be curious to see if like what you were just talking about is something that had an effect on them. If they were like, well, wait a minute, what, you know? So,
yeah. And you know, I think it opens the door for potential animated shows and other stuff like with Luke Skywalker. I don't want to see deep fake Luke Skywalker again. I think I'm good.
That's it. Just
with that. It was a nice. Oh, OK. It was like, you know, it's like when you have your meal and then all of a sudden you get hit over the face with a dessert and you're like, that was great, but I can't have that again. Like, I'm OK. Right. I'm good.
And see, here's the thing with Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni working already. You know, going to be working on Ahsoka. They're working on Rangers of the New Republic. And we would have to assume they're going to be working on the Book of Boba Fett, right? Because it's all in within the same thing. I would think that the Mandalorian show is probably not super long for this world. Yeah. You know, meaning like, I don't see it's going to, that this is something that's going to go 10 seasons. I think maybe another season or two. And I think it would be nice if like, this show winds up like it ends up with, you know, Grogu and the Mandalorian being able to kind of go off, ride off into the sunset. Maybe Luke decides he can't. The same thing Ahsoka picked up. Remember the bond there and all of that stuff and the fear, and somehow they wind up going off and that's why we've never seen or heard from them again.
That was a great, actually, by the way, that was a great line from Din. You don't have to be afraid.
Right.
That to me is like, boy, you are speaking that Jedi stuff, man. You know, I guess Luke says it, you know, he's strong in the Force, but he needs the proper training. You know, he needs to be shaped. And that's super important. So it'll be cool to fast forward a little bit. I think that to me, that feels like the right thing to do is to push it forward a little bit. Let's meet up with like maybe a slightly older Grogu who can now communicate, and find out what happens. I mean, I think it would be very interesting to see not a Luke Skywalker, but a young Ben Solo. I think that would be very interesting to see. Because we know what happens to him, obviously. But
on this show, you mean?
No, I mean
just in general, in passing.
You know what I'm saying? Because I think it's going to be one of these things where, you know, I think half of the season, for whatever season 3 is, has nothing to do with Grogu, right? But there are hints or something is going to pull them back together, and it happens, and then it's maybe you see, oh, you know, he pops up on wherever the hell was it Yavin, where he does his builds his temple. You see Ben Solo in passing, and he grabs Grogu.
Well, but that would mean we'd have to bounce 5 years into the future at some point.
Like I just said, you put it in the future. I don't want
to. Well, you know. You can't put season 3 too far into the future because you still have the Moff Gideon thing to tie up, right? I mean, the Darksaber thing. I don't think you could go 3 years
all out with war.
Yeah, I mean, you'd
drop us in the middle of like, here's what's going on. It could happen that way. You know, we don't know. So it's not,
sure.
Because here's the thing. Like someone said to me, someone asked me, oh, do you think we'll see Grogu at all? Yeah, absolutely. Because here's the thing. Marketing dollars say otherwise.
Well, that's yeah.
People gobble up that Baby Yoda shit, man. He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
He's on T-shirts.
Well, now that they just finally got the merchandise out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, but that little guy's everywhere.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Like. Coffee mugs, diapers, you know what I'm saying?
But it also don't forget, too,
cock rings.
That.
I'm sorry.
Got it.
With the vibrating ears?
I think.
Wow. Oh, boy.
It's after hours. It's after hours at the Fanboy Garage.
Somehow what I'm about to say is not going to seem as relevant or exciting, but, you know, don't forget. One of the reasons why there wasn't merchandise out at the time flooding the market was because they didn't expect that.
No.
So you would assume that this story arc was planned out, right, from the beginning, that Favreau and those guys knew where this was going.
Yeah.
If they didn't expect Baby Yoda to be the marketing phenomenon that it became, maybe Baby Yoda or Grogu, whatever, isn't...
Dies.
You know what I mean? Maybe it... Well, not dies, but maybe it isn't... Okay. Wasn't always meant to be a huge part of this, like, to the end. I mean, I do think they are going to reunite at some point because it would actually make narrative sense considering their bond was a huge part of this story, right?
And he says it.
Yeah.
Because I'll see you again, I promise.
Right. And I think Ahsoka mentioning that she didn't... She, you know, want to train him because of that bond between the two. That's not a throwaway thing. This isn't that type of show that just throws things out there and then doesn't follow through on it. So I think that is going to play a role. But I think that the fact that they didn't you talk about the marketing and the marketing speaks and all that stuff. But at the same time, I think a lot of this was already planned out. And if they didn't have the original merchandise out because they didn't realize this thing was going to become a phenomenon, that leads me to think that maybe the long-term plan wasn't, you know, to necessarily think marketing. Let's cap this character because it's going to be this huge, like, cultural phenomenon type of thing. So maybe that reins it back in and they don't feel like they're pressured into having to bring the character back anyway.
I mean, they wrote season 3, I think, after season 2 was announced, somewhere around that.
Yeah. That would make sense.
So I'm sure it shaped, you know, obviously the reaction and the reception to Baby Yoda shape the finale or the however this thing is gonna go. Whatever.
These guys,
they know what they're doing.
They really know what they're doing. They really know what they're doing. Yeah. And if they don't give us, you know, more Grogu, they'll probably give us something else.
I hope it's not a droid.
For people to go crazy over.
Yeah. Sure.
You know?
All right.
Cool.
So there wasn't a ton going on. I mean, I don't know. Did you want to talk about your Tom Cruise thing? Or
I just think it's, you know, yeah. And at this point, it's old news. But for those of you who have not heard, and if you haven't, I suggest you Google Tom Cruise COVID rant and listen to this dude fly off the hinges at his crew for violating COVID-19 protocols. That, you know, for a guy who, when you see him on interviews, he's all smiling and like, you see a dude who clearly has a shit ton of power, ripping people up and just basically like, you're fired, you're gone, like, you're, you know. But the most important thing that came away from his rant was that the dude lives, breathes, eats, shits this business of energy. And he cares. He cares probably more than I, not that I wouldn't have expected this, but like, you hear that come out in his voice. You know, he feels a lot of responsibility and he, you know, he's whipping people into shape. So a lot of people were kind of like, oh, you know, he's right, but the way he went about it is wrong.
Yeah. I don't think that's the way to do it. And I think he was flipping out on someone that was just standing too close to each other.
They were over a monitor and they were standing too close to each other. Yeah.
Were they masked?
I don't know if they're
masked. I assume not.
Yeah,
which is why he was freaking out.
Well, I don't know how they're doing things in Europe, but I know in the U.S. on SAG sets, you know, they're breaking people up into zones. Mm. So now you're either in zone A or you're in zone B. Mm. If you're in zone A, you need to get tested like 3 times a week. Like, they do have a lot of testing protocols in place. So most likely everyone has to wear a mask on set. If you're over a monitor, you're probably in zone A, which means you need to get cleared.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours to be on set. So most likely there's like layers of precautions, you know, with the testing and the masking and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think it was a big deal that two people in their zone or, you know, actually on set with the actors were standing next to each other. I don't think you need to yell at people like that. Mm. I think you need to tell the COVID-19 officer, which is now required to be on set, hey, do something about this.
What if he's the officer?
He's not the officer.
Okay.
He thinks he's the officer, you know.
No, but he's a producer, right? And he's paying, like,
it doesn't matter. It's not his job.
All right, here's the other thing. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I can give a shit about Tom Cruise. But if he is a producer and the movie has already been put on pause twice because of COVID, do you think if your money is coming out your pockets, you think you're going to lose your shit over the potential third time because people aren't doing what they're supposed to do?
Well, I still don't think that you need to talk to people like that, you know, especially like people that are professionals and working.
Yeah.
I think if it was like a blatant, repeated, I'm going to take my mask off and like not listen to anyone's protocols because I want to protest this, I feel like that's a little bit different. Mm. But either way, don't lose your shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, I know he's feeling a lot of pressure, but I just, coming from working on sets and working in environments like that, like, I just don't understand how anyone can just go off like that. But hey, it's Tom Cruise. So, you know, he thinks he's the king of the universe and he lost his shit.
He's a Scientologist, right? He's the king of some high-ranking.
Oh, yeah. He is so deep into Scientology. Yeah. Like, he is up there. He's, like, one of their masters, you know? I still don't think you need to talk to anyone like that. I think that's when there's probably an officer on set. That's when you say, hang on a second, go talk to that officer and say, hey, you're not doing your job. Can you please do your job? Because that's only if you just tell someone, like, hey, make sure they do their job, they'll separate them, and that time that they were so close together is maybe only like minutes. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, everyone's already tested to begin with. Now, again, I don't know what they're doing in Europe. If everyone just shows up to set and there's no protocols in place and you don't know where anyone has been and there's no contact tracing in place and no one's like filling out questionnaires and, you know, reporting symptoms and stuff. Yeah, maybe that's a different story and you're scared because you don't know what anyone's doing. But I think for the majority, these sets now have like such stringent protocols that they're following. So most likely those people got tested before they got cleared to work, and they're wearing their mask and they're doing their stuff. If they weren't and they were just standing a little bit too close to each other, that's when you tell someone, like, hey, those people are standing too close to each other. Can we please separate? Yeah. Or, hey, guys, can you just separate a little bit? Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Professional. Don't lose your shit. Those people don't care what the investors in the U.S. Like, I thought the really interesting part of his rant was, like, these people are watching us. They're waiting for us. They want us to succeed, or, you know, whatever he was saying about the investors in the U.S. We're doing this so that they can do it, right? He was saying something like that.
I talked to the directors. I talked to producers. Blah, blah, blah. Like, they're all watching us. They all want, you know, we are the future of this business. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, which I really didn't understand because
I'm trying to think of other films that are in production right now. I mean, he probably has the most high profile film in production at the moment. Maybe some of the Marvel films, but it's Tom Cruise, so yeah. I mean, it's all he gets a lot of attention.
Sure.
You know, the interesting thing is too, like, apparently after that rant, like, multiple people quit.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were like, I ain't dealing with
I wouldn't want to get spoken to like that.
I mean, I'd be like, dude, you're 5'2". Who are you yelling at, bro? Catch you outside, son.
It's a different story. Like, okay, if someone knew they had COVID and came on set and came to work and didn't report it and he found out, sure, go ahead. Go yell at that person, you know? But you need to get cleared to work. And I think that's how it's working for all types of sets and stuff like that. And ultimately, that's not your job. Everyone on set has a job. That's when you just need to be professional and call someone over and say, hey, just like split them up, or be like, hey guys, you're a little bit too close, thank you, all right, like come on, we all know what we're doing here, you know? That's it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's it. I don't think what the people were doing warranted his, like, that was rage.
Oh, he was, I mean, he called them mother effers.
That's your issue.
Yeah.
You were raging at something. That's not normal.
Don't do it again.
I don't care who you are, you know?
I mean, he had a Christian Bale moment.
Oh, yeah.
Who wins? Tom Cruise, Christian Bale.
I don't know.
I think Christian Bale takes
it. The Christian Bale thing is still pretty epic.
Christian Bale's like, you're in the background. Oh, da-da-da-da. You know? What don't you understand?
But the thing with the
guys have big egos.
The Christian Bale one was just also like, it's like a spontaneous, like I mean, this wasn't like a, you know, like here you got the COVID stuff, people are stressed out. There's these, like, Christian Bale just lost it.
The dude moved the light.
Yeah, move the light. Like, okay, it's not really the same thing.
Think about that.
Okay,
we got people dying over COVID. Tom Cruise loses his mind. Okay. Christian Bale loses his mind over someone touching a light.
Right.
the good old days.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, you're effing amateur, man. You're effing amateur.
I just said that again. Look, I understand where he's coming from, but I just don't think any professional should talk to others that way. There's always a way. Even if someone's doing something wrong, there's always a way to handle it.
Yeah.
With grace.
Yeah. So Tom Cruise, this is not the way.
Wasn't
Tom Bruce.
Wasn't the Christian Bale rant on the Terminator
Yeah, Salvation.
Salvation set.
Yeah.
He should have raged about just the existence of that. Talk about a production that should have got shut down. That was the one.
It was like, oh, it was like a real pivotal, you know, pivotal scene for him. Like, when was that scene? The credits, maybe?
Yeah.
What? Oh, jeez. It only got worse after that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I guess somewhat COVID related. Wonder Woman 84 was released overseas. And interestingly, not doing that well in China. Which is obviously the second biggest market in the world. And now with the U.S. pretty much like shut down, it's the biggest market right now, right? Yeah. And they've actually had a real resurgence there, not of COVID, but in theaters. In China, the theaters have been doing really well there. But Wonder Woman 84 so far underperforming based on what they were expecting. Which is interesting. And I don't really know what that's about, but I think it's doing like 14 million right now this weekend. And the first Wonder Woman opened to 38 million. So just to put that into perspective, and did finish with 90.5 million, which is certainly a really good number. Yep. It's not what some of the, you know, more recent films like blockbusters have done in China, but that's certainly a healthy total. So that there was, was maybe a little concern over that, especially since, you know, Warner Media they're going to be looking at, those are the markets that were supposed to be driving the box office for this. Now that there's going to be, you would think, very little U.S. box office, at least relative. So I don't, you know,
who knows? I mean, it's also a testament that they couldn't hold this any further.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do this.
Yeah. That's actually one of the reasons they, in the article I read, that they said some of the blame was they feel like it just the marketing, because it's just been so long that they just felt like the marketing didn't really deliver, because how can it have impact when it's been dragged out?
Seriously. And you're just, you're burning money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like all of the things that, and it's as simple as this, because, and I know this because my daughter she likes Wonder Woman, and she got like Twizzlers. It's like this magic rope, this special edition Twizzler magic rope. Like, how long is that relevant? They can't be buying time and spending money on a Twizzlers partnership for months and months and months and months and months. You know what I'm saying? Like, those things are like very quick cycles. And so you think about just that in terms of like candy, cereal, all of this stuff that you'd see, all of that marketing out, it's just burning the money. So they got to get it out. That's it. So I get it. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
We're going to watch it next week.
That's what I was just going to say. We'll watch it next week and we'll see. You know, the early reviews that I've seen on Twitter from people that have seen it are kind of very sugar-coated, like
rose-colored glasses, aren't they?
Yeah, like but also very vague, like, oh, it's like heartfelt and just kind of your regular, I don't know, these like words.
I think they
kind of
have
often
to be, right? Though,
why?
Some
because
of those
are under embargo.
Probably. I mean, I don't know if it's an embargo, but I think that they probably can't.
Does that even matter?
What do you mean?
Well, a lot of times when you see those early reviews, they're not like the most detailed. Like,
I don't need detailed, but I feel like it's very, here, I'm just going to say something nice.
Fluffy.
It's fluffy. Oh, instead of like that shit was cool, because that has some emotion behind it. Like, I saw Wonder Woman and that shit was cool. That doesn't tell me anything. It doesn't spoil anything, but I can see that person's excitement. But everyone's like, it's a heartfelt, like, feel good movie. And I almost kind of, leading up to us watching it next week, I'm kind of like, oh, I wonder if it's just
shit is free.
I've seen some of the reviews, though, that have been some of the reviews I saw were fairly over the top in their praise of the movie. Like, I've seen more than one person say it's like Donner Superman quality good. A few people compared it to that, saying like it harkens back to that time of superhero film. I did see, and this is not surprising, because I do think this will be a general perception with people. A lot of people said, well, this is a movie I needed right now.
Yeah.
Which I think is understandable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going 100%. To be a, like, this thing would have to be hot garbage for people to, I think, not like it. It's not that I, it's not going to be, yeah. but you know like, what I mean? Like, it's just like, this is the first movie like this.
Blockbuster.
Blockbuster, superhero, it's Wonder Woman. It's, we're going to be able to watch it on Christmas Day if you want to, at home if need be. Like, this is the, it's really a, it's, in a lot of ways, it's something that a lot of people need and want. So yeah, I do think this has that feel good type of deal going for it.
It reminds me of the Bill and Ted reviews. Like, that movie was not all that good. Yeah. You know, it was like, it was okay.
Yeah.
Like, great to pass the time. But people are like, this was a fun, you know, it was great to see, you know, Keanu and Alex Winter get back in the roles. It was like slipping on a pair of pants. It was amazing. It was almost like, you know, they just knew exactly who to channel. It was like, what?
I know. That's how I feel.
What, you guys are giving this a pass? You guys are giving it the COVID pass? Like, what's going on here? Like, no one wants to be so negative because, the world kind of sucks right now, right? That's kind of the way it is. Mm. And like, look, to me, and I'm going to say it for what it is, Wonder Woman 84 has a very high bar, right? Because I adore Wonder Woman. Adore it. If I don't get the vibes, I will shit all over it. I have no problem with it. I got the toilet paper ready.
Next week?
Poop all over that shit. And because it's free, I'll even poo-poo on it more. Because I ain't have to pay for it. You know?
It's either poo-poo or poo-pourri.
I'm kidding. No,
I think we're going to enjoy it regardless. I think
because we need it. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it is. Because we do need it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why The Mandalorian is so good too, because we need it.
We want to love something.
Although, we'll see. The Mandalorian was good pre-COVID too, though, which is nice.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that argument actually doesn't hold water, does it?
Well, it does in a way, but.
In the toilet.
Well, you're. A lot of toilet stuff going on with you.
Man. Sorry.
Yeah.
We'll review that next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think though the state of reviews are going to change a lot.
I think that's one thing
that is going to change. I think that I think they're going to be one less relevant, especially as
they weren't already.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean. Like especially as movies go now, like. In the case of the Warner Media films being released right to the home. So it's not even like you have to worry too much about like an investment. I think they're going to wind up becoming more of like a social media thing where it's like people are going to, they're going to be there if you want to see an opinion, if you want to see a thing. But I think that reviews for the most part have become a niche thing anyway. I don't think the average moviegoer pays attention to them. But I think they're going to become even less important as we go forward because with just seeing what's happening with theaters and with the way people can consume movies, like people now, especially if it goes toward, as we go towards streaming at home, people are less selective when it comes to that. Like they're just looking for something to watch in that moment and they'll give it a chance if it's free. So if that's your first contact with a lot of these films, like who cares what the reviews are? Right. Yeah, I was like, I'll just watch it now and judge it for myself. You're just
watching to pass the time.
Yeah.
I did with Mulan.
Yeah.
That's because things are such good quality now, either way. Even if the story sucks, you know, like the quality overall of filming and films and TV shows, like the quality is good. So people will give it a chance because they're like, oh, yeah, this looks good. I'll give it a shot.
100%. Yeah. And most people who, like, are not us. You know what I mean? We're watching with a very different eye.
Different eye, yeah.
Things. Yeah. You know what and I mean? If you like, I mean, low budget movies like in the 70s and 80s don't look like the low budget movies that come out now. Like it's, I mean, yes, you can clearly tell a movie that was like a $200 million film versus a movie that was, but there's really not much of a difference now, you know, between, you know, so it's hard to tell sometimes how much money was actually spent on something. Right. I mean, unless it's like a real, like film on sci-fi, you know, that's different. But
yeah, I was going to say cheap movies these days are like a dime a dozen. And that's pretty much what like Netflix is filling its catalog with.
Sure.
These like C&D movies. You're like, who the hell? What?
Yeah.
But they don't look like, in some cases, they don't look as terrible as like those movies would have looked in the VHS days. Back, yeah.
With the like, you know, clip art covers or
where you see the stunt you see the stunt people in the scene. It's like, oh, that's the stunt man right there. It's stunt like the woman. Room. Yeah.
Oh boy. I did watch that. That's a hilarious movie.
What's that?
The Room.
Oh, well, that's a that's a whole different level of
that was bad. Yeah. Yeah. I was really drunk.
Yeah. So were they. Pretty sure.
On the spot.
Yeah. So, I mean, I did see an interesting article on, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter. If it isn't, I apologize. Kind of taking you into the boardroom when the decision was made to put this, the Warner Media film slate on HBO Max next year. It was kind of an interesting article because it does give you some insight into the motivations. And it reading through it, it does come across like it was somewhat of a panic decision. You know, like they claim that they didn't let their partners know because they were worried that it was going to leak out and all that stuff. But I think it came down to the fact that they really feel like they need to do something to boost HBO Max.
Yeah.
They feel like streaming is the future and that they're way behind. I mean, look, you know, Disney Plus has 80-something million subscribers right now. They had almost 30 million subscribers within their first 3 months. And HBO Max is 4 months in, and it has 8 million subscribers.
Yeah. It didn't change anything.
And there's the scary thing is there, you know, there's the WarnerMedia stock. See, and this is where it's important for AT&T, right, a company that now is justifying this gigantic, whatever it was, $85 billion purchase or whatever it was. Like, the stock price barely rose. You know, with HBO Max and when they did that announcement. And that's not a great sign either because Disney's stock price went up 14% instead of 1%, which is what happened with the AT&T. Yeah, with the Warner Media thing. So now, granted, what Disney Plus did was different. So I've seen people trying to compare the two and say, oh, look, Disney released this Disney Plus slate and look at the reaction it got versus... Yeah. They're not the same thing, right?
No, so Disney's apples,
the Disney Plus slate that Disney released was literally a Disney Plus slate. This is something that's just for Disney Plus. What Warner Media did is not really technically that's not the HBO Max slate. They just moved their theatrical films to HBO Max, right? So two very different things. And the biggest reason why they're different is because the Disney announcement could only be looked at as a positive.
Yep.
Right. There's no downside to it. They're giving content to this streaming service that's successful. The Warner Media announcement does have negative and positive right side to it. Because so while it helps maybe the streaming service, we don't know that, it hurts other sides of the business.
Yeah, they
hurts
took it from something else.
Sure. So I think that's why they're two very different announcements. Yeah. So I think that's why the Wall Street reacted differently to both announcements. But it does also speak to the
is an internal investment.
Yeah,
like they're investing in their content. They're creating that content specifically for their service.
Sure,
they're not just going, hey, you know what? The Eternals, Shang-Chi, Black Widow, all here. It's all on Disney.
Yep.
Can you imagine?
Right.
No. And it's it is interesting too that they, you know, they mention in there that the, you know, the people that made the decisions, you know, at you know, Warner Entertainment, they look at this as like, well, this is our opportunity to do this. If we missed out on this opportunity, you know, this gives us a chance to see a little bit of the future right now. Was kind of their logic, and maybe it's not the worst thing in the world. Maybe there's some flaws there in I think the all or nothing approach wasn't necessarily something they had to do. They still could have gone this route, but you know, they're also saying, well, look, other studios are doing similar things, which they are, but still not to as dramatic, right? What Universal's doing with AMC and Cinemark theaters is not this, right? What Disney did with Mulan is not this, and what they've done with, so now Disney Plus has moved some movies, like Soul, for instance, to non-premium, streaming on Disney Plus and stuff like that. So they've done it, but not with their entire slate.
Yeah.
You know, they're selective with – I think they've thought of, you know, what movies could benefit from that, what movies couldn't benefit from that and whatnot. So it is just still a fascinating conversation. And one thing that it ties into, which is interesting, is the fact that this finally got some more information on the Zack Snyder's Justice League, right? We found out that it's probably going to be R-rated. And we found out that it looks like it's going to be released in March. So they haven't announced an official release date yet, but Zack Snyder, I think, put something out on social media saying like that, it teasing or alluding to the fact that it looks like it's going to release in March. And then also kind of teasing the idea that it might also get a theatrical release.
Yeah.
Which is very weird when you consider the fact that Warner Media just took all of their theatrical releases and dumped them onto HBO Max for next year. So now it would be interesting to take the film that was made or set up for HBO Max and then put that in theaters would be bizarre.
No one's going to want to sit in a theater. No one wants to sit in a theater now for 2 hours.
No.
They're not going to want to sit in a theater for four hours.
That makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, so that could just be like wishful thinking, like, hey, once all of the chapters, you know, because it's going to be released, it's not one big movie yet, right? They're going to release it in episodes. Right. So yeah. Once all of it's completed, and then maybe we could do a theatrical. I mean, look, maybe they'll like do like years? Maybe they can do like a Fathom Events type of thing. You know, where it's like a yay, just one night, a Saturday and whatever, when things are open, it becomes an event type of release that I could probably see. And they would be an audience for that. But I just found it interesting that here we are talking about, you know, Warner Media and HBO Max and moving all their theatrical movies to HBO Max. And all of a sudden, the irony of Zack Snyder's Justice League potentially going to theaters at some point, it was just kind of not lost on me, that's for sure.
Whatever, we'd all Justice League, great.
Yeah, Aaron's about as excited about that as he is for House of the Dragon, which I know is his next favorite show. House of the Dragon, I guess, also another HBO series. It's the prequel, the first spinoff /prequel to Game of Thrones. It's going to be based on the Targaryen family, right?
I'm excited for that. What's the hold up, Aaron?
Well, probably the fact that the show ended terribly, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not why I don't care about that. I'm sure George R.R. Martin is writing some of this stuff and helping to.
Yeah, he's a co-creator of the show.
Co-creator, whatever.
Yeah.
This old bastard is going to die before he finishes his books, right? Because he's already sold everything over to the media companies and like the TV and all that bullshit. Dude, you've been writing these books since 1996. Finish your books, bro. That's why I'm mad. Finish your books, because this guy, as with many other people, have started in the books before Game of Thrones was a thing. Now you got this spinoff show. That's great. Finish your fucking books, man.
Got it. I've never read any of the books.
The books are, first of all, if you like the show.
Yeah.
The books are like 10 times better than the show.
Of course. Just like
10 times better. I mean, they're long as shit, but they're way, way, way better. And here he goes. Like, whatever. I'm over him.
Yeah. It's pretty unacceptable. He's an epic failure, dude. Yeah, exactly. It's pretty unacceptable to not have finished those books. And again, I think at this point he doesn't want to finish them.
No, because he's making money.
He's making money, and I think he realizes that no matter what he does, he's now painted himself into a corner, because he's either got to end the books in a similar fashion to the show, which we know was not popular. The show was popular, but the way it ended, not so much.
Right.
Or he has to go in a completely different direction, which will just be weird.
And it undercuts the whole thing.
Right, and I also think that... Look, we know that they were Benioff and Weiss were consulting with him on,
right,
you know, general ideas of where he was going with the story, right? Right? So we have to assume that that ending was probably close to where the book was going.
Still never saw it. I stopped, dude.
But the idea is now it's anticlimactic because if he does make – if the books wound up ending similar to the – it's almost like, well, what's the point?
Right.
You know, and also he knows it didn't go over that well, so then it would be like a double disappointment. So right. I think now he's just kind of backed off and but it was – yeah, it was never – I get that they maybe didn't expect the show to become this cultural phenomenon that it became, right? I get that. They probably just figured it was going to be this limited run series that would go a couple seasons, whatever. But, I mean, there's just no excuse for it. Like, he knows these books should – this series should have been finished 10 years ago.
Yep.
I mean, and he's known that, and he's had to get, and I just think he's purposely, yeah, he purposely hasn't, he just doesn't care. He doesn't lose anything by not finishing these books. His reputation is kind of already like, people are like, the hell with this guy, you know? But just don't pretend then, just say you're not going to finish it. But how could you not? How could you not finish your book series at this point?
That you started in 1996, man? Damn. So mad about that, man.
And he knew years out that HBO was going to... HBO didn't announce, like, after the whatever... I don't know how many seasons did the show wind up going. But they didn't announce after the second to last season, oh, this is... They announced it, like, years in advance, a couple years in advance, that this is going to be the final. So he even knew then.
He sucks as a person, man. And the thing is, he's like... Oh, I need to focus on the writing. I need to No. I'm going to get it to you in
2017. Yeah, I'm too detailed. It takes me it takes me forever to edit myself and through and stuff and drafts and
this isn't even the last book.
I know. He's a couple books behind.
Oh, Aaron.
He's so mad.
Fall over his chair.
So mad, man. I it sucks to be a book reader. Because you're invested in the world, right? And there is a lot that is overlooked. There's a lot that, for the sake of, you know, converting and translating stuff into television, is cut. You know?
A lot of things, get cut or they get lost.
A lot
of
the subplots are lost, and it's like because audiences aren't going to gravitate to certain things, right? Like when I watched the show, I said the mysticism of, you know, the dire wolves and their connection to the Stark children, all of those things wasn't in the show. A character named Old Nan who helps us really kind of like talk about the things that happened in the past. Like these doors open for, you know, the children of the forest and for, you know, not the Witch King. Why am I blanking on his name? Anyways, that dude, the King of the North guy, the ice guy. There's a lot of stuff that's just put to the side. And here we are with an ending for a show that sucks. What do I have to look forward to for the books, right? Like, Arya Stark is different in the books than she is in the show. Like, she's close. But she becomes a prostitute to kill somebody, mm-hmm. And there's a dope ass scene that's supposed to be in this next book that never is going to get released.
You know what? Like, I've never read the books, but there's some series that I've read myself, you know, that I like, and I can imagine if the author never finished it, and I saw a bad ending on the television screen, I would be so mad too. Get it.
It's just so unusual to have the show finished before the book. Like, that never should have happened.
No.
Right.
And right. I know a few people who were reading the books before it was a show and never watched the show because of it. And now they're like, well, I guess I either have to watch the show because I'm not getting an ending to the story. Yeah. So it's like, what do I do now? Do I watch the show, which is going to be inferior in my mind? But it's bitterness now, you know, because it's like, what do I do? Because that's the only way to see an end to the story. But it's not really the story that I was following exactly anyway, and it's just, yeah, it's a mess.
And also, once your story gets put into, like, film form or TV form, it's not just one person's vision anymore.
Right.
Nope.
So that's it. It's now multiple people's visions.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And all that context is lost.
And right, the perspectives change because you can't – I mean, those books are dense. And yeah, obviously, yeah, he can't
exactly
accomplish.
So
yeah,
he can't just go, here is a first cut of my book and how it's going to end. So here are the beats that you need to follow, and here's some of the context of how we get there. No, it's like, so here's who the real king and, you know, who the real ruler is. How you get there is up to you,
right?
Just make sure that these things kind of happen a little bit, but all of that context and all of those characters, like, you do it.
And that was a big problem with the last season, was that essentially it was just, there was no guide. There was nothing to go by.
Making their shit up as they go
along. They had to. It was essentially an original story, and it was not a particularly strong one, you know, because it had no book to go by at all.
Yeah.
It was all original. So now you're taking... It's so now, you know, it's not even George R. R. Martin's vision.
No.
I mean, yeah, he could have given them some notes and said, look, this is how I was going to end it. Like you said, this is how I thought this was who was going to be the kid, blah, blah, blah. This was the ultimate fate of some of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
But this was that final season was their story. It was the writer's, the creator's story. It wasn't George R. R. Martin's story. It's unfortunate. So, but anyway, House of the Dragon, 2022, it's going to hit HBO, and they'll probably try to do some HBO Max tie-in type thing there for that too, just to, who knows what that'll look like anyway in another year or so, but and there's going to be more spin-offs and prequels apparently, just for Aaron to get all excited about. No?
Yep.
I have nothing to say about any of that shit.
No. Okay.
He's so mad.
So
he's
mad at angry. George R. R. Martin. Like, I'm not even playing with you. I've sent him, like, nasty grams on Twitter. I'm one of those fans.
Got it.
I legit have. I'm like, I saw something get announced. I forgot what it was. And I was like, dude, stop tweeting. If you're going to put any...
Start writing.
To writing anything, it should be finishing your effing book, man.
Yeah.
Oh, books. My God. Are you... don't be like Tom Cruise.
I know.
Don't have a meltdown.
Don't do it again.
Yeah. All right. So on that note, you can check out thefanboygarage.com. Listen to our episodes and check out the merch store for the holidays.
Purchases.
Absolutely. Do all that stuff. Of course, join the conversation. You can talk to Aaron about Game of Thrones. It's his favorite topic.
I'm going
to
make a t-shirt.
Yeah.
GOT sucks.
You can do that on the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook at the Fanboy Garage. And of course, for those of
write
you who
books.
Yeah, for those of you who watch us on the YouTube, subscribe, like the episodes, tell your friends about it, all that fun stuff. And for those of you who aren't watching the YouTube, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Do both. It's a different experience. Both platforms, right? The audio and the video. So you can do that as well. And you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
You guys can find me at Banana_TFG.
Are you guys distracted by R2-D2?
Oh my God, so there many toys this week.
And you can find me at AARonSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you so much for listening to episode 125 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week. And if you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. And we'll check you guys next week.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.